You're listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks, your source for centered and focused play therapy coaching.
Hi, I'm Dr. Brenna Hicks, the kid counselor. This is the Play Therapy Podcast, where you get a masterclass in child-centered play therapy and practical support and application for your work with children and their families. In today's episode, I am answering a question from Crystal in Minnesota. I think I've had a few other Minnesotans write in because I remember talking about the really cool trip that we took to Minnesota a couple years ago. So hello to you Minnesotans. And I want to dive into this email. This is actually a really helpful question. So Crystal, thank you. I'm going to read parts of it and we will tackle it together. I'm a clinical social worker currently working in a public school and have discovered a love for play therapy. I'm moving into a group practice and I found your podcast absolutely invaluable in honing my skills as I make the transition. I'm so glad, Crystal. That's why I do it. It has been wonderfully affirming to know that non-directive child-centered play therapy is a thing. Indeed, it is. Your podcast is helping me learn how to articulate why I'm doing the way that I do, especially since the schools are very directive environments. Yes, battle worth waging, but for sure a struggle for school-based CCPTs. I'm wondering how to end sessions when ensuring the child is emotionally regulated and safe. Today I was working with a 5-year-old with a known trauma history. He was doing some really intense processing around power and control and safety, and at the end it was clear that he was not regulated enough to safely return to class. I always give 5 and 2 minute warnings, and he often struggles to leave at the end. Today he was reluctant but willing to leave, but he ran from me in the hallway, pushed other children, and in situations in the past, I've introduced a regulating activity like breathing, rhythmic movement, etc., but I'm not sure what to do now that I've committed to the non-directive way of life. Oh, you know, once you've come to the light side, you're never going to go back, Crystal, so we'll figure it out together. So here's what is going on in a scenario like this. And even if you are not school-based, there are inevitably children that the time is up and you know that they are not regulated. And you know that walking out to the lobby and greeting parents, caregivers, whomever is likely going to be difficult. So this is a very universal scenario. We've given 5-minute warning, we've given 2-minute warning, and the child wraps up and we know that there is still that dysregulation, there's still the charge, there's still all of that going on for the child. And that is tricky to navigate. So this is a really helpful question. I'm glad we're diving in. All right, first and foremost, you need to have decompression scenarios worked into your process. So for us, the child chooses where to wash hands as they leave the playroom, and then they choose a snack. So we're kind of engaging different aspects here. So first of all, we're killing some time. This is why we have a 50-minute therapeutic hour, because we have a 10-minute turnaround. So Crystal, I'm not sure what your schedule is like in the schools. And for those of you that are not in private practice, I don't know what the governance is over how long you have and what your turnaround time is. If you have any control over that whatsoever, and or maybe a more helpful thing to say is you need to ensure that you have governance over some of these things in any environment in which you work. You need to have built-in decompression turnaround. In other words, what can you do that will engage some senses, that will take the child out of their deep feelings, that will give them some time and space, that will allow them to kind of recalibrate, potentially take care of some of the somatic stuff that's going on? And if you think about it, if a child walks somewhere, washes hands, walks somewhere else, chooses a snack, consumes said snack, and then goes out to the lobby, now all of a sudden there's some built-in time for the child to kind of come down, and now the body is engaging in other senses and other experiences. We've changed environments. We've focused on several different things. We've made some choices. Now all of a sudden, we're kind of getting out of therapy, internalized stuff, and we're into more decision-making and externalizing things. That is the goal of the turnaround. So Crystal, for you, I don't know if you, maybe you're on, I know a lot of times school-based people have 30 minutes. So I don't know if maybe that means that you have a 25-minute therapeutic hour and then you use that 5-minute turnaround time to work this out. That's very important. Another component is there are times when you have to make a clinical judgment call that you allow the child to remain with you a little bit longer, even if that means that you go over time a little bit. So we have the work in where we have the snack and the hand washing and then walking out to the lobby. Sometimes that isn't even enough. So sometimes we have an extra 2 or 3 minutes before we even leave the playroom. Time is up, but we kind of give that extra pause for kids to really kind of come back down from whatever it is they're working on. Sometimes we take a extra few minutes in the snack area before we go out to mom or dad or whomever, because we need to make that clinical decision of, does this child seem regulated enough to be able to handle going back into a different environment that's going to be a shock to the system? And whether they go back to a classroom in a school, whether they go back to caregiver in the lobby, the people that have been waiting, so teacher and peers in the classroom, parent and siblings in the lobby, whoever has been waiting for the child, they are oblivious to the depth and the burden and the heaviness of what that child has just been processing. So inevitably what happens, they go out and they're still carrying the weight of it. They still feel the burden of that. And whoever greets them, it's like, hey, did you have fun? Oh, you're back. Okay, let's jump into math. And it's oblivion, not in any kind of critical way, but there's like a lack of awareness and there's oblivion and ignorance to what that kid has just been put through during that play session. And so sometimes it's also a psychoeducation aspect of helping parents, teachers, whomever, understand what expectations are. Look, there's going to be times when your child comes out and they're quiet, they're dysregulated, they're a little bit disengaged, they're a little bit withdrawn. And we have to be sensitive to that. We don't want to respond in certain ways. We don't want to ask if they had fun. We don't want to ask what they did. We don't want them to have to dive right into something real fast. We kind of need to honor their process. We need to respect where they are. And sometimes it's going to take a little while for them to recalibrate. So often it's conversations with teachers, with school counselors, with parents, caregivers, whomever. Why? Because they don't know. You don't know what you don't know. But we can see it. And so we have to advocate on behalf of the child. That allows us to help parents and other people have expectations of what is normal and appropriate, and therefore how they can respond differently. So when you said that he was willing to leave but reluctant, that is a clinical awareness that we had, oh, he's probably not fully capable of heading back yet. So I'm wondering if in your scenario, if you can walk the long way to the classroom, I wonder if you could have him go on an errand with you. I need to go drop this off at Miss So-and-so's office, so I wonder if you'd like to come with me. And that'll kill an extra 2 minutes before he's actually engaging in the hallway with peers and other children. You have the luxury and the ability to make decisions on behalf of the child. That's the whole premise of CCPT. It's child-led. We recognize where the child is and we meet them where they are. We sit in the pocket of whatever it is that they're going through. And so when he goes into the hallway and pushes other kids, it's no wonder. And so maybe it's about accommodating that and coming up with an alternative that will still allow him to transition back to class, but in a more favorable way. And again, this is about setting the scenario up for success. We want the child to be successful. We want the adults to be the stakeholders, right? The parents, the caregivers, the teachers, the principal, whomever. We want them to feel that it's successful. We want to feel that things are successful. And sometimes it's setting expectations and providing different alternatives to accommodate the need. And it's not an every week thing. There are going to be some weeks, actually probably most weeks, where he is fully capable of transitioning back with the regular process. But every once in a while, we make that clinical call where we realize, you know what, I probably need to give this kid an extra couple of minutes. And that is justified clinically. That is a professional instinctive reaction that we are able to implement as a result of knowing kids and knowing where they are and knowing what's happening for them. So I'm actually very happy to hear that you have abandoned your breathing and rhythmic movement process. And I understand the why. I understand what the intention was behind that. But we have to recognize that children learn to self-regulate. Children learn to self-control. children learn to recalibrate themselves. And if they're learning it themselves, instead of being told to do an activity, that serves them long-term in every scenario, rather than just here and now in this moment, I'm breathing to calm down. That does not give them the longitudinal outcome of, I know how to get myself under control and I know how to regulate when I get upset. That's the goal. And through the four universal outcomes, through all of our interactions, obviously, that is the facilitation of those outcomes. So, Crystal, thank you so much. I hope that that's helpful. And struggle across the board for us when we know a kid is in the thick of stuff and time is up. I mean, it's almost like we feel it with them. Like, oh gosh, like they need to be in here longer. So we make little tweaks along the way to do our best to accommodate that. All right, y'all. I love you. Hope you have a great week. We'll talk again soon. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks. For more episodes and resources, please go to www.playtherapypodcast.com.